Blog Talk Radio.
JH Experience with co-host Dolly Miller Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
And now your host, the notorious MJH.
Radio, and we have our host here, the Donnie Miller Brennan, and the Reverend James Rife. We had Larry Ballard on the line a minute ago. It looks like he dropped off. What's going on, everybody? How are we doing tonight? Oh, wait, I can unmute you guys.
He was going to call in and speak tonight, and Reverend Rife is here with us to speak about cultural theology and how we're taking God out of government and how that affects us and how that leads up to that. I noticed I was doing some research on George Washington, I just wanted to bring up, and they're talking about, you know, the separation of church and state. It was never really a separation of church and state. The church couldn't rule the state, and the state couldn't rule the church, but it wasn't take religion out. George Washington required his troops to have an hour of prayer every morning, and he also made them to go to Sabbath services when they weren't fighting. So this isn't accurate what they're saying about the Founding Fathers. They're saying that they were deists, that they did not have any religion. It's not true. They all had a great deal of religion. But however, if Reverend Rife wants to tell us about how, when he talked one evening about everybody develops their own individual theology, and of course that is your own individual plan. If it's right for me, I'll do it. And then no one has anything. So Reverend Rife, just jump in.
Well, I just find that, we've heard these lies for years about how the people in our country, or that our country was not founded by Christians. We are a Jewish Christian nation. The Old Testament and the New Testament are the basis of our laws, and that goes back to William Blackstone in England, who was the same way. And we, as a nation, held Christian values, Christian Jewish virtues. And the vast majority, maybe I shouldn't say vast, but the majority of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, if you trace it back, you'll find that they were clergymen. And, you know, they were not Muslim clergymen, and they were not atheist clergymen. They were various Christian clergymen. And that is the way our country was founded. And even someone like Thomas Jefferson, who stripped the Bible, he wrote his own Bible, and he took out, for example, all the miracles of Jesus because he didn't believe that those things really happened. But even Thomas Jefferson believed in God and believed in the Christian understanding, Christian Jewish understanding of God. So it's patently untrue to be saying that our country was not founded on a Christian, Jewish, Christian ethic. It's a lie.
When they speak about how religion can't be in government, what do they think is happening in some of these Arab states? It's very definitely a religious government, and they disallow any other religion. In Egypt, they are slaughtering Christians.
That's right. And in Namibia, all over the world they are. You heard about that, I think it was a Catholic church, I wouldn't swear to that, that was blown up the other day in Iran, I think it was Iran or Iraq, and, the people that were killed there. That's right. I mean, this is what those people do. You have to understand, though, that jihad for a Muslim is like a sacrament for a Christian. This really brings them close to God when they do it. And so when we hear how we have to be understanding to the Muslims, we have to always remember there are many good Muslim people. There's no question about that. And then there are the fanatics. But whether a person is a fanatic or whether a person is a regular Muslim, they have a fly in the ointment of their theology. And that fly is that everybody has to become a Muslim. And if they don't, they feel that they can kill you. Christians would like to make everybody Christian, too. But we don't go around killing people. And even in the worst times, the Middle Ages and the times, say, around the 1500s when America was discovered and the Indians were made Catholics. Columbus and these people didn't come here they did come to spread the Christian religion. Columbus certainly did do that, but he didn't go around and try to be mean to these people. So there was never that kind of an attitude. But even at its worst, the, if you want to call it, Christian imperialism was never like what has been going on with Islam for the last 1500 years.
Well,
and
you were
so,
speaking
yeah.
about the Iraqi attack. On December 31st, militants left a bomb on the doorstep of the home of an elderly Christian couple and rang the doorbell. So the husband's 76 and his 78-year-old wife were blown to pieces when they answered the door.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they're nice people. And again, you have to understand that Muslims are not people that can be trusted because they have a belief system that incorporates this kind of behavior. So we have a nice Muslim living down the street until all of a sudden he starts really reading his Quran and he starts believing it. Then what do you do with him? Now, you could make the same argument that this man who killed all the people in Arizona the other day, that, well, he was raised in a normal way and was a normal American and all of a sudden went crazy. But the fault there is with the people in the schools that knew that he was a strange kind of a guy, and never reported him to have him checked out.
Renaissance into flag burning. He was very liberal, very left wing, into flag burning, supporter of communism, very left wing, an Obama supporter, and very anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, and there's a difference, and anti-Zionist, and there's a difference in that. And he also belonged to a neo-Nazi Hitler group. So this man was not influenced by Sarah Palin. He had written hate information on the Internet about Palin and Beck, but were trying to use this tragedy to a political advantage.
Yes, that's
and
really...
say that it was Palin and Beck that did this. This was not the case.
That's really despicable. Now, I heard today as I was coming in there was a 70-ish-year-old man who was armed, who was in a store nearby, heard the shooting, and ran out to see what was going on. And by the time he got there, they were just wrestling this guy to the ground, and then he helped with that. But he said, if they hadn't wrestled him to the ground, I would have shot him. Well, you see, instead of saying we have to have our guns taken away from us, now they're going to want to ban high-capacity clips or magazines again, you know, for handguns, which is something that they were doing some years ago. Well, all that's going to do is cause people like me to go out and buy whole bunches of clips so we've got them put away and can sell them to other people. This kind of stuff is the knee-jerk reaction that the press always does because they have an agenda. The press is not to be trusted. The press in our country are similar to the reporters that published the Völkischer Beobachter in Germany years ago, or Pravda. We cannot trust our press. And so what we really need to be doing is starting to call our legislators and say, no, we don't need less guns, we need more. We need to have more people armed because you can't have policemen on every corner. And if we have good, solid citizens that are armed, they can take out somebody when he starts this. Now, this guy walked up to that woman and shot her in the face. All right. You wouldn't have been able to stop that because it happened so fast. But then he turned around and began shooting others. And if there had been two or three people in that place who were armed, they would have taken that guy out before he'd have taken out more than two, at most three people.
What we're looking at, too, like you said, in what everyone has their own individual theology, we have allowed that in this country where everybody can do whatever they want. We're not supposed, oh, he wants to belong to these groups. That's all right. You know, we're supposed to allow those groups to flourish. It's freedom of speech.
Again, but this goes back to the crisis of authority in our nation. And so what is happening here is what happened in the book of Judges in the Old Testament is coming true now. There was a time when there were no judges in the land, and every man did what he felt was right for him, and the whole country degenerated into chaos. So when we lose our theological values, which is what I've been arguing for here the last number of weeks, when we lose our theological values, then where are you going to get your authority? Well, the convenient one to step in is the government. And the government controls everything. And they control the price of food. They control the price of gas. They can control the price of everything. See? And so then the government becomes the god. And the government, if you like the government and are kindly disposed, will give you a very high-paying job and will see to it that everything goes well for you. But if you don't like the government and you don't play along with it, then you become part of the dispossessed minority. And if the rumors that I am hearing are true, that there really are some of these internment camps out in the country, these things are not built for nothing. They're going to get filled up. And something
and
else.
What they're waiting for is for, you know, they could be waiting for a martial law. A martial law to come into effect. Oh my God, you've got shootouts on the street. Therefore, we take everybody's guns and we interior them. So people probably shouldn't go out on the streets and start shooting because if they do, then they're going to say we need martial law.
You're right. People should not go on the streets. People should not. But again, when we have lost our value system, the common, average, middle-class American person didn't do these kinds of things years ago. This is something that has been coming on more and more as we have lost our authority. And as we begin to promote strange behavior, now we have 41% of our children that are born illegitimately. Well, see, years ago, that was considered a terrible thing. People were looked down upon that did that. But more and more were doing it, so we'll have more and more children and more mothers on welfare. It is a common thing now to talk about a couple who are domestic partners, but they're not married. Again, because we've lost the value system. And it used to be that poor people and a lot of angry blacks and people like this were doing this. But now this is happening all over the country. Bad behavior is becoming what is going on in our country today.
You know, there's a lot of discussion in the military now, and we're talking about how we need to allow more rights in the military. And the military was not – our military was developed on the British structure. And George Washington, if someone – vulgar language, as he called it, was disrespectful, disobedient. They got 30 to 40 lashes. So
that's
the
right.
Military, as Cass says, it is not a free society, and you don't accord rights in the military. You lose those rights when you go in, and you have to abide by a certain rule. But now if we see that the military are granting individual rights, then we're going to disable our military also.
Well, yes, and we don't want to fight winning wars anyway. So maybe it's time for the government to be honest, and because they don't want to win wars anymore, maybe it's time to just disband the military, because everybody in the world loves America anyway. They wouldn't want to attack us. They'll be nice to us. Maybe that's what we should be doing, because we're turning the military into such a waste. You're absolutely right. By the way, I wanted to say one other thing about this killer down in Arizona. Had he been kept in decent Christian faith, what he did would never have happened. But he went into occultism. He went into, I think, probably with a skull on his altar, black magic. When you start doing those kinds of things, it does disorder your mind. And that does turn people into crazy behavior. had his mother and father been on him and kept him into a middle of the road kind of an understanding of God and reality, the things that happened would never have happened. Now it may be
kind of broken
that,
their silence today.
Yes, they did, and they broke their silence by telling everybody how sorry they were. And
right.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
And the mother's in bed. All she's doing is crying. You know, she doesn't know where they went wrong.
Yeah,
so,
and I don't blame her. I'd be crying too if my son had done something like that.
So you don't, you know, so you don't know what is happening there. But this is a tragedy of major proportions, and let's hope that it's not politicized. And out of it, they don't say, "Well, we have to take away guns. We have to go into martial law."
Well, I think it's obvious. It's obvious that Sarah Palin is stupid, and it's all her fault. See, everything's Sarah Palin's fault, and besides, she's stupid. I mean, you hear that kind of talk, then you got to wonder how smart are the people that are doing that kind of talking.
You know, I've discovered that toughness in women is equated with stupidity, but mean bitchiness in women is equated with intelligence, like Nancy Pelosi. She's just a mean bitch.
Yeah.
Sarah Palin, because she's tough, they equate her as being stupid. I mean, you know, is this convoluted logic or what?
And again, it just seems to me something is rotten in Denmark when we can have this guy Assange get all this information and send it out, and nothing is done. It tells me there's some kind of a government cover-up going
sure
on
it
here.
It's an effort to control the Internet because we can't allow WikiLeaks, so therefore we need to control everybody's Internet. And
sure.
Because of that, so it's a really good way to prop up controlling the Internet. But again, it has to start somewhere. Like the problem,
and by the way, did you notice that
is the people that elected him? How could this population elect someone like that? And that goes back to your theme of cultural theology. You elect someone like that because you have lost all authority. There is no sense of anything other than yourself, outside of yourself. And if everybody has their own code of morals, then that's how someone like Obama is elected. Obama is just a culmination of this loss of control.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
The loss
of authority.
And in point of fact, we have lost so much control, so much of our value system today, that the kind of things that are happening are going to be happening more and more and more.
What scares me more is a nation that elects someone like this.
That's right.
Are they going to be able to see what they did? And again, this is, I feel, because of everyone has their own theology. You take God out of religion. You take God out of the schools. It was never meant to be that way. This country was not founded on freedom from religion.
Not only that, but when you bombard people for 50 years with how terrible racism is or how terrible prejudice is, then nobody wants to be racist and nobody wants to be prejudiced. In point of fact, prejudice simply means prejudging. And so, for example, if I've had bad times with Plymouth automobiles, then after I've had two or three of them and I've always had bad luck with them, I won't buy a Plymouth. So I'll look at different cars and I'll say, oh, no, I'm not going to buy that Plymouth. I've had bad luck with Plymouths. That's all prejudice is. And so if you have a race of people that have not lived up to the standards, people do get prejudiced toward them. That is a fact. But we have made it into something that is a moral issue, so that it's immoral. It's politically, or it is impious politically, to be prejudiced. And so our country was a sitting duck for Obama, because after all, he was a black man, and we can't be prejudiced against a black man. Think of all the people that voted for him because he was black. That's nothing but reversed racism. But again, this is what happens when people don't think clearly. And when you don't have a good solid religious base, a good solid patriotic base in your own life, those kinds of things are going to happen.
Well, we're seeing that. I remember when I was in college and they were saying that Kennedy was the first new type of president, and the professor was saying, no, he's the last of the old presidents. You know, it was different after them.
Again, people had this inflated image of John Kennedy. He really wasn't much of a president. He didn't do anything that was very spectacular. He wasn't very successful. But what he did have was an interesting New England accent, and he was a very handsome man. And so people fell in love with that image. People that heard the debate between Kennedy and Nixon, who heard it on the radio, said Nixon won. But the people who watched the debate on TV said, oh, no, Nixon lost. Now, they heard
Nixon.
The very same words. But Nixon was not a pretty boy like John Kennedy was.
No,
and apparently had not put on makeup before he went to the cameras that night. So all of these things.
Thing for John Kennedy, everybody expected him to be very anti-Semitic because his father, of course, was, you know, promoter of Adolf Hitler. You know, his father was a Nazi by all means, of all sorts. And John Kennedy was one of the best friends that Israel ever had. No one expected that. They expected him to be along the lines of his father. But John Kennedy was not that way. You know, but was he a good president? I don't know, you know.
Well, I don't remember that much about John Kennedy. I was about 18 years old when he was killed, and it was a great tragedy for all of us. We all felt terrible, but he didn't seem to me to be too much different than any other president, but then that's begun because I was not politically astute in those days. But there was nothing to separate him from any other president except he was good-looking, and he had a very interesting speech pattern. Well, see, that's all you need.
He was a better friend to Israel.
Kennedy was a good friend to Israel?
Yes, he definitely was.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, the scriptures are very clear, and Jesus has often says it in scriptures, that every word of the scriptures will be fulfilled. And so the scriptures tell us that those who befriend Israel will be befriended by God. Those who do not befriend Israel will not be befriended by God. And it only makes good common sense for us as Americans with Christian backgrounds to defend Israel. Now, well, we can't talk so radically religious. Oh, no, we can't be doing that. But then it makes good sense from another point of view, and that is that Israel is our little bulldog over in that part of the world. And instead of giving them a bad time, we should be giving them more weapons because they're going to help keep the Muslims who really don't like us under control. So from that point of view alone, it should be being done.
Well, President Ford, when they talk about God and the government, President Ford, when he pardoned Richard Nixon, said, only, I have asked your help and prayers, not only when I became president, but many times since. Here's what President Ford said. The Constitution is the supreme law of our land, and it governs our actions as citizens. Only the laws of God, which govern our consciences, are superior to it.
That
so
is right.
So they cannot say that they've taken that presidents all the way down the line did not inject religion into it. They did.
I heard some man on the Rush Limbaugh show today talking about how it was inexcusable that the House of Representatives wasted all that time reading the Constitution. And I thought, what a moron. No, they should be reading the Constitution, and they should open every session with a reading of one of the parts of the Constitution. They don't have to take a lot of time, but they could take 5 minutes, 10 minutes every opening of the session to read something from the Constitution so that the people that are representing us will see that what is important is that you behave and conform yourselves to the Constitution and not try to get around it.
Well, I like what Ford also said. A lot of talk has been about Ford, how stupid he was, President Ford. But what he also said in regard to no historical legal precedents and obtaining a pardon for Nixon, that he said he did not feel that the law should be applied differently to government officials than it should be to anyone else. But he's saying that as by law every individual is entitled to a speedy and just trial, he didn't think that would be possible for Richard Nixon for the duration of his life.
That's correct.
And that was one reason he pardoned him. So I can understand that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And a speedy and unbiased trial would not have taken place. And by the way, why would that have been so difficult? Because of the vitriolic, gut-wrenching hatred of the left toward Richard Nixon. And you see, the same thing happened when George Bush, No. 2, was in the White House. This vitriolic, gut-wrenching hatred of Bush, so that in Canada, they actually produced a movie about assassinating him, and books were written about assassinating him, or at least one for sure was written. I think there were two. But now today they're calling for civility. But where was the civility during all those years?
Well, and in so one, hopefully this Congress will change things, but both parties have done a lot of things. Both parties have been playing with the money and looking for their own power. I can remember my former boss told me, he said, once they reach a certain level where they're at the nomination level for president, he said, once they reach a certain level, it doesn't matter which one is elected. He said the military-industrial complex will accept either one. Once they reach that level, you don't have much of a choice. So he called us basically a one-party system. He said you need 15 parties. You need 100 parties. He said let everybody duke it out at the election box. He said you don't have a free country when you only have two parties.
I agree. We need more parties.
And I think that is because, and partly that is due to, this symptom of this cultural theology theory is that every individual has their own theology, so therefore you can do whatever you want, and it really doesn't matter. I heard one girl on calling a radio talk show. She said, I think it was Hannah, she said, as far as Obama, I really don't care where he was born. Hello, then that means you don't care about this country because of the laws of the country say you must be an American citizen, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
She said, I don't care where he was born. So that means you don't care about that. What else do you not care about?
That's right. There you go. You see, but
so then
but
we not caring. We have an apathetic citizenry that elected Obama. The problem is the citizens that allowed this to happen.
And how do you suppose that happened?
Well, I want everything I want.
Well,
I want you to take care of me. I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to that. Everybody has certain rights. Everybody is not equal, and everybody doesn't have certain rights.
There you go. And we've dumbed
life, liberty, and the pursuit of property, and they change it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So everybody has life, everybody has liberty, and everybody has the right to pursue property and to pursue their own happiness. But everybody does not have the right to be supported by somebody else.
That's right. And what we have done is dumb down the kids in our schools. We've dumbed down the training in our churches. We have not taught children that patriotism is a virtue. I don't think we even pledge the allegiance anymore, do we? As we begin the day in school,
I don't know if they're even allowed to do that. I can look that up. I don't even know if they're even allowed to do that.
The point is, as we dumb down our children so that we don't tell them what we really expect of them anymore, then they get confused. So that pretty soon everyone has his own homespun religion. Everyone has his own homespun political idea. And that creates just absolute chaos.
What was it Joseph Campbell said? He said, what is the problem with society? And Joseph Campbell says, the absence of ritual. He said, when you have a bar mitzvah, when you have confirmation, he said, you went from a child into an adult. You crossed between adolescence into an adult. Certain things were expected of you. He said, now it's just a party. That loss of ritual is important because now you want what the adult world has, but you don't know what you have to do to achieve it, and you don't care. You just want it. You don't want to have to work for it. So he said the loss of ritual. And of course, Joseph Campbell was big in religious philosophy. You know, people familiar with religious philosophy. I'm sure they all studied him.
Well, again,
he said the loss of ritual in society.
We have the example of Jesus himself, who went to Jerusalem at the age of 12, and later on, when his mom and dad went back to Nazareth, their first night out where they were going to camp with all these people that were walking on the roads, there was no Jesus. So they realized he had stayed behind in Jerusalem, and they went back looking for him. They searched. It took 3 days before they found him. And when they found him, his mother was very angry. And Jesus was in the outer precincts of the temple talking with the rabbis. And when his parents found him, they were angry, and she said, Jesus, why do you treat us like this? Don't you know your father and I have been looking for you? And Jesus said, why were you looking for me? Didn't you know that I would be in my father's house? And when Jesus said that, at the age of 12, that meant he had come to Jerusalem bar mitzvah. So Jesus was now a man in the eyes of religion. He was religiously, he was an adult. And when he said, "Must I not be about my father's business?" he was saying two things. He was saying, first of all, to Mary in a very kind way, "Joseph is not my father. My father is God. That's my father." But he didn't say, "I hate my father. I want nothing to do with him. He's not my father anymore." He didn't treat him that way. He said, "Joseph is not my father. My father is God, my heavenly father." And then secondly, he was saying, "And my life's work is going to be connected with God's house, with the temple." He didn't say, "And here I have a saw in my hand, and I'm going to be a carpenter and follow in my stepfather's footsteps." He didn't do anything like that. He decided at an early age of 12 that he would do the work of God. And then the very next sentence says that his mother and father did not understand what he was saying, and that he then went down with them to Nazareth, meaning he came down off of Mount Sinai, off of Temple Mount, and that he went back with his parents to Nazareth, and it says he was obedient to them, both of them, so that he treated his stepfather as if he was his real father and was obedient to him. And his stepfather must have earned that. He must have treated Jesus in a very good way. But today we have so many broken homes so that kids don't learn to be obedient. I can't tell you as a parish pastor how many people I have who come to me and tell me, "You know, my stepkids are driving me crazy. You know, it's hurting our marriage." Or kids that come to me and say, "Well, you know, my stepfather isn't nice to me. He loves his kids, but he doesn't love me." And this is the kind of a breakdown we're having in our culture. Because
we're talking about the left wing and the liberal side of our nation. And by the way, the Democratic Party in no way resembles the Democratic Party of yesterday. I mean, I'm sitting here and reading a lot of the tweets from individuals that say Sarah Palin should be shot. Let us pray that Sarah Palin contracts cancer and that she and her whole family die. And a lot of these are just vulgar. Who's going to kill Sarah Palin? I mean, this is a shot. Here's another one. I mean, why are they so afraid of this woman that everybody wants to kill her?
That's right. I find that absolutely fascinating that every time the lefties can do it, they start screaming about Sarah Palin. Well, Sarah Palin is very stupid. Well, Sarah Palin is guilty, is responsible for all these things. Isn't it amazing that Sarah Palin or George Bush are responsible for all the problems in the world? And both of them, by the way, are stupid.
Well, what I find interesting is that this is allowed to go on, all of these death threats against Sarah Palin and against her family.
Yeah.
And they're allowed to go on. If they were against, you know, someone in the Democratic Party, they would be in prison.
That's right. But if the lefties, it's the left-wing columnists that are constantly out there. The first one within an hour after the shooting, New York Times, talking about how we have to have decency in our speech in our land. We have to get away from this kind of name-calling and ugly behavior. But it's the left-wing that does most of it and always has.
Well, you know, again, when we get back into what we can do to turn our society around, and I know that individually parents need to take an interest in their children. However, that isn't happening. So, you know, the people that are concerned do need to work with their churches and say, "Wait a minute, you're not really presenting Christianity or Judaism as it should be. You're going into entertainment theology. You're saying everybody has a right to do whatever they want." So those individuals that really do have an interest in it, really do, shouldn't they, you know, try to get together inside their churches, form committees and groups and saying, "Wait a minute, you've got to stop this. You've got to stop putting out this kind of message," and instead putting out the message that the Torah and the Bible gives.
Well, of course, but you see, it's going to go back to a major retrenchment or a major retraining in the thinking of the people of our country. The pursuit of happiness has been twisted into you can do anything you want in order to be happy. There's not much thought about responsibility. And this is a serious problem. So that we have women thinking they can be just like men. And so now we have women on submarines. I mean, how stupid can you be? And will we be putting women, you know, in combat units in the future, frontline combat units? If so, how many people are going to get killed because these women will be a distraction? How many more deaths will we have? And so we have women working, women out of the home. It used to be that women stayed home and took care of their family, that was the important thing they had to do. And you see, that still is an important role. Now, at my congregation, we've got a daycare center, and people bring their kids there as early as 5 o'clock in the morning and pick them up as late as 5 in the afternoon. And the people that work in the daycare make a little bit above minimum wage, but they're taking care of the best that those parents have, their children.
What they're doing is entertaining the children. They're not taking care of them and teaching them. They're entertaining them. So these children grow up with a need that life is a series of entertainments, and they need to be entertained. And therefore, it seems, if I'm correct, then it seems to me that if you grow up with this concept, then life is entertaining. You need to be constantly entertained. Then there is no need to look at religion or any other form of authority or any form of responsibility. But how can I get that which is fun, which makes me happy?
That is right.
What
and you see, again, it gets back to irresponsibility. And a part of the irresponsibility is that we all have to live higher than we need to live. And so both parents now have to be working. And what does that do to those children? It's no wonder that we have children who are dumbed down because they don't have any discipline. I feel terribly sorry for the teachers in schools today. I mean, we don't have children who are used to being told no. We are told we don't have children who are used to being disciplined. If you spank your children, you can get arrested if you do that today. And when that kind of
telling the children that in school, even when my daughters were in school, teachers were telling them, if your parents abuse you, if they whip you, you can tell us, and they will be arrested. They've been doing that for 20 years.
That's right. That's right.
Teachers are actually telling the children if their parents whip them, they can be arrested.
And that's why I'm all for homeschooling. We've got to get our children out of the public school system. And pretty soon it'll be impossible to do that. They'll arrest the parents for doing that. But while we still have a chance, we have to get our children out of the public school system because our school system is nothing more than a big socialization process. The kids are not learning well. Why is it that we are having...
You're telling us there's another tenet of cultural theology then? You're telling us that one of the tenets of cultural theology is that of socialization programming inside of the school system, and that if we homeschool our children, and my daughter homeschooled my little grandson, and believe me, she had the lessons planned, she had everything. He did go back into school, and he went back with higher grades than those that had been inside the public schools for a year.
That's right.
So you're saying that a tenet of cultural theology would be socialization of children inside the public school system, and that parents, if they are concerned, should consider the prospect of the possibility of homeschooling their children. This is a full-time job, though. When you homeschool your child, this is a job, and you have to be home to do it.
That's right. Then the mother has to stay home. That's right. Of course.
My daughter works, but she works at home off of her own computer, so therefore
she
can still do these things. So we're saying another tenet of cultural theology would be socialization inside of the school system.
Well, look, Dolly, originally in our country, it was understood that people would send their children to school and that they would learn religious values. And the separation of church and state was never even talked about. When Thomas Jefferson first talked about that, he used the phrase to placate a group of Baptists who were worried that their Baptist children would be forced to go along with whatever the denominational majority was where they were living. And he said, no, we have a wall of separation between church and state, meaning that we don't hold any Christian religion to be the state church. In England, it's the Anglican Church. In Germany, it's the Lutheran Church. And he said,
"Now
hold on." So, but the point was that they were training years ago. They trained kids in school to believe in God and to believe in the things that we all were taught to believe up until very recently. And the Congress even issued a Bible for children to be reading from in school. I'm not talking church now. I'm talking in school because they couldn't get Bibles from England. And the idea was that we want our children to be trained in such a way that they will be happy and productive people. So
well,
that,
you know, I'm kind of a fan of George Washington. And George Washington did not have a lot of formal education. This man was tutored, you know, inside of his own home. So this was a homeschool person. Now look at the difference in someone who was able to take this ragtag band of people in these colonies and bring them together and form a nation. Now compare him with someone who has been educated in the school system like Obama. There's no comparison.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And we have, look at the dumbed down nation we have developed today, so that girls are going around getting tattoos. I mean, how vulgar and ugly. So that the pants they wear, the clothes they wear, are revealing and sexually arousing. And when you talk to the kids, few of them know anything. They don't know anything about how the government works. They barely, and you see how badly children write. And
well,
of course,
I'll tell you, when it comes to tattoos, of course, I'm Jewish, but we weren't even allowed to get our hands stamped. When we went to a dance, my sister and I were talking on the phone one night, and we both said at the same time, remember getting your hands stamped? Oh, my God. You couldn't do that. And I know a rabbi told me once, he said, well, your daddy, he was a little bit, you know, overly strict, but I understand his reasoning. If he let you get your hand stamped, what came next? And when you would go to a dance and get your hand stamped, they said, that's wash off. It's there for a long time. You have to go home and explain that to an Orthodox father? No way, baby. It just doesn't happen. I mean, that's, of course, he was half Indian, too, but I mean, but he followed that side of the religious order. We weren't even allowed to get our hands stamped. But again, Jews don't get tattooed, although some are doing it now.
Well, again, because it's an erosion of the cultural values that we've all been brought up to hold to be dear. And these are all signs of the cracking of our culture. Western civilization is going to be destroyed if we don't do something to bring a stop to this erosion. And the very first thing that has to be done is we have to again get people back into faith. And I think that that's going to be virtually impossible. In my congregation every Sunday, we pray for a revitalization of Christianity in this country. But I don't think it's going to happen because the people have become too free. The people have become too inured to any kind of authority so that this moron could go and blow these people away. And we can talk about him being crazy, or we can talk about him being mentally unbalanced all we want, but he was very aware of what he was doing. He was rational. But he formed a religion of his own.
I don't think he was stupid by any means.
What?
I don't think he was stupid by any means.
No. But again, it's because we have lost our values. And as long as this continues, as long as people say what is wrong is right, and what is right is wrong, as long as we continue this way, it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse, and I don't see any way that it's going to change. I wish it would.
This is Larry. I'd like to interject a comment.
Oh, hey, Larry. So nice of you to join in. I'm going to be quiet and let you speak to Reverend Reif. Reverend Reif, this is Larry Ballard.
Hi, Larry. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Reverend. I just want to give you a couple of comments on what you were saying about the churches. I think basically you've got the big churches that have become dependent on the government, just like our school systems, for funding or for tax write-offs. And as long as that's happening, as long as we're allowing the government to get into the pockets of the churches and make them dependent on them, then you're going to have what I call seeker-friendly churches, which is one of the things that I think we have. One of the examples is that I was at a fairly large church recently, and the pastor had an evening event in which he was talking about the government and how the government is encroaching on our rights, and it was very interesting. all of the events that I've ever been at that church were always filmed. And the pastor stood up in the front and said, there'll be no cameras tonight, there'll be no microphones, there'll be no tape recordings, because we can't take the risk of having the things that are going to be discussed tonight get out of this house. And so that's something that I think that it's going to change. I think that as we go through this next year to 2 years and society breaks down, I think a lot of those big churches are going to go by the wayside. And what I hope and pray happens is that as things get bad enough, finally people will fall to their knees and will begin to turn to God. And then the seeker-friendly churches will slip by the by. And then the churches that are apostolic, that are truly actually teaching what God wants us to learn and teaching the morality that we're supposed to have, I think people will start to turn to that, and I think we're going to have revival in this country. At least I pray we are.
Well, I hope you're right. Go ahead.
And Larry is, if anyone's interested in Larry, they can go to libertycrusade.com. Libertycrusade.com, that's Larry's site, and he is author of Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom. And I hope that what you're saying is correct, because as Reverend Rice says, we're in a period of cultural theology where everybody has their own theology and everybody does whatever they want, and that allows us, and you're saying that these churches are indebted to the government, so therefore they're following the government lines. We have government churches. So I'm hoping what you're saying is going to prove to be true, because then churches like Reverend Rice and those smaller temples would actually be able to start bringing society back to where it should be.
Larry?
Yes.
Larry?
I'm
curious. I think that is a good incisive understanding of the church. But my question is, how is the church indebted to the government?
A lot of the larger churches have their tax exempt status.
Well, all churches have that.
All right, but the big ones, then they go out what they do, and at least this is my opinion. Now, you're a preacher, so tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
They go out and they get great big huge building fund projects, and then if they have any issues with the government at all, they're so stressed by the financial situation that they can't risk going against the government and having any kind of problems with the government. And so they become more or less dependent on keeping that status, not having any issues with the government, and they sort of fall in line. Now, maybe that's an oversimplification, but that's what I think I've seen in a couple of churches that I've been in attendance at.
Yeah, I have thought for a long time that perhaps we have to take away the tax-exempt status from churches. Maybe they should be paying taxes so that then they could say to the people, we want you to vote for all the libertarian candidates, you know. But if you say anything, yes, you can risk your tax-exempt status, and that is something that they threaten the churches with a lot. And then it comes down to the guts of the pastor. Are they going to have the courage to speak what the Bible says, or are they going to let the government tell them what to say?
Yeah.
Germany fell and went into Hitlerism in large part because the churches didn't have the guts to stand up to them, see? And those were state churches, state-run churches. We don't have that in this country, but we do have that tax exemption, and maybe it's time to take that away.
You said it better than I said it, but I think that the fear of standing up and saying something that the government's not going to like and that causing them to lose their tax exemption keeps them in line. It keeps them from speaking the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And then you have events like I was talking about where if someone's brave enough to speak against the government, then they have to stand up and say, turn the cameras off, turn the microphones off, no tape recording devices. And that right there tells you that something is seriously wrong.
Think what that says about how we no longer trust our government.
Absolutely.
Isn't that amazing? Yes, and that's exactly what has happened. We do not trust our government anymore.
And another comment, we were talking before about schools and about, you know, we've got I don't know how many people really realize it, but basically within the stimulus package, they hijacked the student loan program, and he who pays and controls the money controls the agenda. But going back even further to one of your earlier comments in terms of homeschooling, there was a case in California, I can't remember the exact name of the case, but where they were homeschooling children, and the government got involved, and the government in California said, well, the principal reason that we don't allow homeschooling, it was later overturned, was because we see, quote, end quote, that the school system should be used to teach patriotism. And so basically the government was saying that, no, in California you can't homeschool because it's our responsibility to teach patriotism. Now, later that was overturned, but what is that other than propaganda?
There you go.
They're controlling what we think and what we say, and they're turning the children into little robots that will later do what the government does. And it's just like, potentially, just like in Nazi Germany, when children were turning their mothers and fathers in, that's the kind of control they want to get over us. And then Stalin said, if you give me your children for 5 years, I will guarantee you that they will follow what I tell them to follow during that period of time, and you will lose them for the rest of their lives.
That's exactly right. No, that's true. And this is why I think that about the only way that we can save our children is either through homeschooling or parochial schooling, who are being self-consciously teaching the children to think for themselves and to be free of all of the propaganda that they're getting in the public schools. Absolutely. No, I agree with you.
Well, going to one of your earliest comments, I was on the whole time, earliest comments about the Islamic system. When you were in a public school, we are not allowed to, we can't make the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Yeah.
And there was a case just recently where a child put a U.S. flag on his bicycle and rode to school.
I remember that.
He was called in and told that he had to take it off. Later, the parents objected, and it got in publicity. He was allowed to put it back on again. But basically, the Bible and our very nation are being degraded, because in that context, what they want to do is they want to take away any national pride, because they want to move us towards this one-world government. And if we think too much like a sovereign nation, then that's going to keep us from you know, withstanding them. But if you go to an Islamic school, as I'm sure you are well aware, they're not funded by the government, and
that's right.
They study the Quran every single solitary day. So here we are, the Christians in this land, denied the access to our Bible to study what we believe, and yet the Islamic nation is studying that Quran every single solitary day when they go to school.
That is right, and this is why we need to get... This is why we need to get back to private education. But again, you see, in the university setting, the government has its hands in so many of the loans for students, and so much other parts of higher education, taxing and everything else, that even today, even private schools have a hard time making it. So they end up taking government support, and then that compromises them. So that really strict Catholic and Presbyterian and so forth, denominational universities and colleges have to be careful what they say and what they do. This is a great, great tragedy. And it is something that has come in gradually into our country and is destroying the fabric of it, the whoop and woof of our nation. I agree with you.
Well, gentlemen, this has been wonderful. Larry, I'm glad you jumped in on this conversation. And Michael, I know you're there. What do you want to say?
What's that?
I know you're there, so what do you want to say?
What do I want to say? Nothing. I was just listening to you guys. I had a couple of comments I could have interjected throughout the show, but I think you guys pretty much covered everything, and you guys really did a great job. It's been a very interesting show. Mm-hmm. And I love the way you guys kind of like direct yourselves. You know, it's just like I'm sitting here listening, like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be doing this, but they're doing it for me, so okay, if it's working, don't mess with it. Great job, guys. You guys are awesome.
Larry, thank you for coming on.
You're welcome.
I hope you'll I hope you'll come on again, because this is good repartee. We need to keep talking.
Right,
I agree.
And we want to work out a circuit with the two of you together. Larry's in Chicago and Reverend Rife's in Oshkosh. There's not that much of a distance between them, and we can work out a circuit with about three people here together, and I think that you can do a great deal of good for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I may have to come down there and see you in Chicago one of these days.
Or I was going to say I'll come up and see you, but I think
absolutely.
It's beneficial for us to meet one another.
But you had better wait till after the Bears-Packer game.
Now we're talking reality.
Too bad he's gone. Mike
oh,
Vidka,
my goodness.
Bobby, yeah, Mike Vidka and Bobby at the U of I. I mean, who didn't love those? Who didn't love those guys? So anyway, I'm going to let y'all go. You guys have a good night. Larry, thanks
yes.
for joining. Reverend Wright, thank you for being here.
Thank
and
you.
Michael,
thank
always,
you, Larry.
Thank you very much.
Michael,
bye-bye.
And Mike, don't stick any drugs up your butt.
You either, Dolly.
Okay.
All right, so we got Cast for Senate coming up on Thursday, right?
Yes, sir. We do have Cast for Senate coming up on Thursday, and he's looking forward to getting back after the holidays and spending time with his family. He's looking forward to coming back on.
All right, sounds great. And then we have Larry Ballard back on Friday with
Larry
Bacon
back
Fade.
On Friday. Yep.
All right. Thank you very much, Dolly. It's been awesome.
It's been awesome, Mike. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the MJH Experience on Blog Talk Radio.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.